We're thinking about ambition, vocation. There's something about the word ambition, it doesn't seem quite right. There's a hint of selfishness that attaches to the word ambition. That may be right or wrong. If you ask any youngster what is the question they get asked most during their time of growing up, it's what do you want to be when you grow up? And we all used to say things like, I want to be an engine driver or a pilot or a goodness knows what else. But we all had those lofty ambitions that we thought that one day we would be able to accomplish and achieve. Sometimes they were slightly unrealistic. The particularly cruel careers master confronting the teenage girl who said she wanted to be an air hostess with the words, but you have to be pretty for that. Slightly unfortunate. But some people do achieve their ambition. On the other hand, vocation seems far better. There's something about that word. It conveys a sense of selflessness and of altruism. And if you think about it, certain professions are more suited to a sense of vocation than ambition. It's unlikely that someone would describe themselves as ambitious to be a nurse. But they might say it's their vocation. They feel their vocation is to serve the community as a nurse and in other caring professions. Not about satisfying self, but about bringing satisfaction to others. And of course, we all know that society takes advantage of this entirely laudable aim by suppressing wages and salaries for those who engage in such work because they're not in it for the money anyway. So we don't need to pay them much. We'll concentrate on those who are in it for the money and we'll make sure they have all the money. And it's right and proper that for the sake of fairness and justice, the church speaks out against such what seems to be inherent unfairness in the way we treat people. Then there are some folk who find their ambitions to have been overtaken by a sense of vocation, religious or otherwise, myself included. I had my ambitions. I won't share them with you. You'll be either surprised or disappointed, shocked or horrified, depending on your state of mind. But they will be few amongst us, those who find their ambition overtaken by vocation. That's why Jesus said, many are called, but few are chosen. Now, that's not because there's anything particularly special about people like me. It's just, what sort of a world would it be if we were all ministers and none of you sat in the pew? You know, you couldn't all be up here. You only need one up here and the rest of you down there. So that's why there's only a few of us. It's not that there's anything particularly special about any of us. But the point I want to make this morning more than anything is ambition and vocation need not contradict one another. Every Christian, everyone who commits themselves to follow Jesus, needs to know that they are called. There is a sense of calling that attaches to one's commitment for Christ. Called by God to contribute productively to the ongoing ministry and mission of the church. And that's not always understood. The fact that a Christian is called. I was attending an asylum tribunal with one of our Iranian friends, and the representative of the Home Office used the phrase, well, of course, to be a Christian is a lifestyle choice. And I sat there for a moment and I thought, actually, that's entirely wrong and a total misunderstanding of what it means to be a Christian. Christianity is not a lifestyle choice. It is that to which one is called, often against one's better judgment. We are all called to be followers of Jesus. But there is a sense in which that calling ought to transform our attitude to what we do in terms of our ambition. Yes, we can still have ambitions, but that sense of calling under God ought to reflect in the way we treat the ambitions that we have. So someone has written this: if anyone does not work passionately, even furiously, at being the best in the world at what they do, if they fail their talent, their destiny, and their God. If you don't do the very best you can do, if you aren't the very best you can be, you are failing your God-given talents. You are failing your destiny, which is before you, prescribed by your ambition. You're failing God. So whatever you do, be the best at it. Or even more directly, if you don't have the ambition to be the very best at what you do, then what's the point? If you aim for greatness but keep missing, fine. At least you had the guts to aim. There's honor in failing that way. But there's nothing honorable about settling for mediocrity. There's nothing honorable about settling for mediocrity. Part of our calling as Christians is to see to it that whatever we do in life is elevated above the mediocre. To confront those who would have it described in that way and say, no, there is something that is consecrated about this. We will no longer treat it in that way. That's our calling. But then, of course, there is the reality for so many people that the job of work they do neither satisfies their ambition nor does it contain any sense of what may be called a vocation. It's what they do so that they can pay the bills, taking whatever job is offered regardless. And we have to acknowledge that this applies not just to those doing the more menial, mind-numbingly boring jobs. It can apply equally as well to those at the very top of their profession. Job satisfaction is not guaranteed even at the top of the tree, even though it's quite likely not to be there at the bottom of it. When I was a student, I worked on a building site. You wouldn't believe it, would you? Me, manual work. I did it for a while. And I used to work alongside a chap named Alf, and Alf was a bricklayer. And after a while, I began to notice that Alf only came to work 4 days a week. And I thought, well, this is interesting. And then a few weeks later, I plucked up the courage during a lunch break and said, Alf, why do you only come to work 4 days a week? And Alf said, I can't live on 3 days' pay. And when you think about it, there's something very profound about that. All Alf wanted to do was work enough time to earn enough money to fund the other things he did in life. And if he could have earned enough money in 2 days, Alf would have worked 2 days. But he actually had to work four. He hated his job. He said to me, I can't stand this. He said, brick after brick after brick after brick. See that wall over there? He said, I built that wall. How boring is that? But he said, I lay a brick and I see a pound sign. And that's how I get through. And sadly, for so many people, that's how it is within the world of work. They do what they do, and to compensate for the boredom, they count the pennies as they do it. And we have to understand that. Who is willing to be satisfied with a job that expresses all their limitations? We will only accept such work as a means of livelihood while we wait to discover our true vocation. The world is full of unsuccessful business people who still secretly believe they were meant to be artists or writers or actors in the movies. The world is full of unsuccessful, unfulfilled business people who believe themselves secretly to have been meant to be artists or writers or actors in the movies. And that is so true, if only we were honest about it. But what a Christian understanding of vocation ought to inculcate in us is a sense that whatever we find ourselves doing in life, we do it in a way that reflects our Christian commitment. The most powerful expression of faith is how we live from day to day, wherever we are, whatever we are doing, regardless of the circumstances of the moment. Wherever we are, whatever we're doing, regardless of the circumstances of the moment, we invest that activity with our Christian faith and commitment, and in that way convey the essence of the gospel. And of course, often we want to be somewhere other than we are, to even to be someone other than who we are. We tend to compare ourselves constantly with others, and we do. We wonder why we are not as rich or as intelligent or as simple or as generous or as saintly as they are. And when we start to make those comparisons, we start to feel guilty or ashamed or jealous. It's very important to realize our vocation is hidden in where we are and who we are. We are unique human beings, each with a call to realize in life which nobody else can. And to realize that to be so in the concrete context of the here and now. We will never find our vocations by trying to figure out whether we are better or worse than others. We are good enough to do what we are called to do. We need to be ourselves. No two pieces of a jigsaw are the same. That's what makes a jigsaw what it is. 1,000 pieces, and no two pieces are the same. If you had 2 pieces the same, you couldn't complete the puzzle. But because every piece is different, the puzzle can come together. And that's what it is for life, whether it's a congregation, a workplace, a community, a nation even. No two people are the same, but all coming together to create the one. So even within church, be yourself. In the workplace, be yourself. Wherever you find yourself, be yourself what you are called to be under God. Be that unique piece of the jigsaw without which the picture would be incomplete. The unique piece of the jigsaw without which you would be incomplete. But just because as followers of Jesus we are called to be servants of God in the world, that does not mean we have to be servile as far as the world is concerned. Our service for God may well require of us that we confront the injustices of the world in a way that does its best to transform society, that it might be a better place for each and all alike. That one piece of the jigsaw transforms the whole picture. I found these lovely words. Charlotte Bronte wrote them in Jane Eyre. So they're written in the way that Jane Eyre is written, but they get the point across. Relinquish what? My vocation, my great work, my foundation laid on earth for a mansion in heaven, my hopes of being numbered in the band who have merged all ambitions in the glorious one of bettering their race, of carrying knowledge into the realms of ignorance, of substituting peace for war, freedom for bondage, religion for superstition, the hope of heaven for the fear of hell. Must I relinquish that? It is dearer than the blood in my veins. It is what I have to look forward to and to live for. The ambition of bettering their race, carrying knowledge into the realms of ignorance, substituting peace for war, freedom for bondage, religion for superstition, the hope of heaven for the fear of hell. That's a lofty agenda to which we as Christians are called, but it's the one which is set before us. Today we have heard the story of Jesus calling the fishermen from the side of the lake, imposing a vocation from God upon the ambition that was theirs within the constraints of the family fishing business. None of us knows whether they wanted to be fishermen. They might have been absolutely delighted that Jesus came along and said, you can stop that and come with me. They may not have wanted to be, it may have been all that they wanted to be. My father was the first of many generations not to work in a coal mine. His father's ambition for him was that he wouldn't work in a coal mine. Ironically, by the time I came of an age to work, there were no coal mines to work in. But that's another question altogether. Sometimes it's best to get out of the family tradition rather than stay in it. So we don't know about these fishermen, but all we know is they were working as fishermen and Jesus calls them away. And later on in the second reading, we heard what had happened as far as two of them were concerned. Taken from the lakeside, Capernaum, and now fearless preachers in the temple, miracle workers in the name of Christ. Taken from fishing nets, preachers of the gospel, and working miracles in the temple. None of us should exclude the possibility that God could intervene in our lives in such a dramatic and drastic way, but it isn't how it is for all of us. And then we've shared in a rededication act for elders and deacons, those whose calling under God is being worked out within the context of everyday living. And we thank God for those who sense their vocation to serve God in the church in that particular way. And it's good that we did what we did. But there are others too. We have caterers. We have coffee makers. We have washer-uppers. We have flower arrangers, we have stewards, we have musicians, we have singers, we have administrators, we have those who receive the offering and those who count it. We have those who help with children. And all of you are deserving of acknowledgement for the way you work out your vocation under God. And then there are those of you whose work is done quietly and unfussily and anonymously, and all are equally valuable, called by God and affirmed by the church. So yes, cultivate ambition, but understand that any ambition we may have is set within the wider context of the call of God, the vocation that is set for each one.